From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo announces a series of efforts to expand voter registration. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on a new report about the governor's top campaign contributors. And New York's DEC announces several fish advisories. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo announced a series of what he calls aggressive actions this week to expand voter registration, saying he wants to help combat low voter participation amid troubling attempts by the federal government that might restrict voter access. But a nearly century-old voting rights organization says the governor didn't go far enough. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Cuomo, in an executive order, directs all state agencies to mail or provide electronic voter registration forms to members of the public who've had contact with the agencies. Cuomo's chief counsel, Alfonso David, says that includes people who apply for professional and recreational licenses.
Fishing licenses, corporations, doctors, nurses. There are state agencies that provide licenses to in a variety of different sectors. The Department of State provides licenses. The Department of Environmental Conservation provides licenses as well. And the objective here is to make sure that when New Yorkers go in and interface with a state agency for services, they're also informed about their right to vote and provided, and the state agencies will provide them with information.
The Department of Motor Vehicles, which already provides voter forms, would include information on the DMV's online voter registration process, along with all license and registration renewal notices. David is also heading a task force to improve the security and the accessibility of online voter registration in New York. The order also directs public college and university campuses to strengthen their voter registration efforts. New York has a low rate of student voter registration compared to public colleges in other states. Jennifer Wilson with the League of Women Voters, which was founded in 1920, says the governor's actions are not enough.
Voter registration is not the issue. In 2016, we reached an all-time high, a record high of registered voters. Registration is not the problem. It's the barriers that voters face on election day that is the problem.
The League, as well as other good government groups, are pressing for early voting in New York and later cutoff dates for registering to vote or to change party affiliation.
One of the biggest deterrents that people face are the long lines on election day. They don't want to wait in line for 2 hours to cast a ballot or even 3 or 4 hours in New York City. So they're like, oh, well, I just won't do it. But if they had multiple days to do it and could do it on their own time, they would actually show up and vote on election day or whatever day they choose to vote.
The efforts to enact early voting and other reforms were unsuccessful when the state Senate, led by a coalition of Republicans and breakaway Democrats, did not act on the bills. Wilson credits Cuomo with putting the measures into the state budget each year, but she says he needs to also follow through with money for county boards of election to pay for the changes. A spokesman for Cuomo says the governor agrees 100% that the state needs to make it easier for registered voters to cast ballots. The governor's counsel, David, disagrees with accusations that the governor is not working hard enough to get the bills passed.
No one should suggest that the governor is not committed to it. I think we have to recognize that we live in a democracy, The governor is the governor, but he does have to work with the legislature to pass any piece of legislation.
The actions come as New York, along with most states, are refusing to comply with a request from President Trump's administration to hand over detailed information about voters as part of a national investigation into alleged widespread voter fraud in the 2016 elections. Cuomo said in late June that the request is too intrusive and that New York refuses to perpetuate the myth that voter fraud played a role in our election. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week, as we just heard from our Karen DeWitt, Governor Cuomo has announced a series of efforts to expand voter registration. Of course, many good government groups think it doesn't go far enough. Your thoughts?
Well, that's all true. However, look, we do know the way that this thing works. Half the country doesn't vote. A disproportionate number of those people are Democrats. So every time the Democrats try to get more people registered to vote, which is exactly what they should be doing, the Republicans say security and voter fraud and all the kinds of things that they have been ever doing since some of the very same people, although they were in a different party at the time. We're talking about poll taxes and recite the Constitution before you get a chance to vote. Well, some of that is behind us, but not enough. And Cuomo, of course, is correct to say that the Democrats have to do a better job at registering people, especially as we approach the midterm elections and then 2020. I mean, if people are able to grab people by the hands and take them to the polls and say, you got to register, you got to vote because your health care and everything else is at stake, you better believe voter registration becomes the biggest thing of all. And yes, the goo-goo groups, otherwise known as the good government groups, are correct to say it doesn't go far enough. That's their job. But of course, you know, they would say that under any circumstances, and it needs to be done.
Fascinating conversation with Politico's Bill Mahoney this week, Alan. He took a look at the 18 donors who have given Governor Andrew Cuomo more than $100,000 and made some links to that money as well.
The two oldest professions are prostitution and politicians. I don't know which came first, but they do intersect. Look, this government is for sale. You take a look at those 18 people and what they got, what they gave, and the immense amount of money and what they were looking for. And there can be no doubt that what we have here is an extraordinary commerce going on. You know, we theorize that politics is supposed to be fair and democratic. It turns out it's a grocery store.
Another article appeared in the Times this week with the headline, No Links to Cuomo. Their ad was labeled Client Andrew Cuomo. This has to do with nonprofit organizations that many politicians set up to what amounts to, many accuse, of skirting the rules of promoting themselves.
Well, you know, again, as old as the hills, the Cuomo people are claiming they have nothing to do with it, but their personnel are all over it and all in it. Ex-personnel, present personnel, and when these supposed outside groups do their work, clearly there is the impression on the part of many people that it is nothing more than a shell meant to service, in this case, Governor Cuomo.
Let's stick with Cuomo and the coming 2018 election. I see someone who gave him a hard time in a primary, Zephyr Teachout, now says she expects he will face a primary challenge.
Well, you know, I expect that Cuomo's got a lot of problems right now. He's got the summer of hell in New York City in the subway cars. He's trying to dig his way out of that one. Unfortunately for de Blasio, the mayor of New York, he decided to sort of pile on to the governor, which was a stupid move because the governor didn't need de Blasio piling on. It wasn't as if the governor's unfortunate predicament right now was going to help de Blasio. That was going to happen anyway. But by opening his mouth, he now gets the tabloids and everybody else to go after him, de Blasio, and give some relief to Cuomo. And that was dumb because we all know what he was trying to do there. In any case, Cuomo's numbers are going down precipitously. The sharks are smelling blood in the water, and that's why you might get a primary.
Seeing a hole in the budget is what we've been hearing with the debate in Washington over health care and what's going to happen. But New York stands to really be hurt if this replacement goes through.
Oh, I don't think there's any question that if there is not enough money, it's going to have to come from somewhere. The state spent an incredible amount of money on replacing the Tappan Zee Bridge, which had to be done, obviously. But to this day, we don't really know where all of that money is coming from. And the idea that the subway system has to be infused, as they say in medicine,
with a transfusion of great amounts of money only mean that the state is in real bad shape when it comes to finding the money that it's going to need. And if this health care thing goes through and Medicare suffers, that's just another piece of bad news for the state.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency held the second of two public information sessions recently on the agency's second five-year review of the Hudson River Superfund cleanup. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was at the meeting in Saratoga Springs last week, where protesters gathered outside.
The crowd of protesters outside the Saratoga Hilton had a simple message for the EPA: remove PCBs from the Hudson River. General Electric's dredging of the 40-mile stretch from Fort Edward to Troy wrapped up in 2015. New York State Assemblywoman Carrie Warner, a Democrat who represents several riverfront communities in Saratoga and Washington counties, spoke at the megaphone and held up a letter signed by more than 40 state lawmakers asking GE to continue its cleanup.
We have the right to a clean river. It has impacted property values. It has impacted small businesses. It's impacted our ability to attract tourists to this region. And we cannot accept this.
The second five-year review from EPA came after 2.75 million cubic yards of contaminated sediment were removed from the river. EPA says the 310,000 pounds of PCBs removed were more than twice the amount anticipated. The report did not call for additional dredging. In its June report, EPA said the results of the cleanup were generally consistent with what was expected. Elevated levels of PCBs still exist in fish. The report says that fish have begun to recover after dredging, and PCB levels in fish are nearing pre-dredging levels. More data collection and monitoring will continue. Outgoing president of the National Sierra Club, Aaron Mayer, said as a child, before the 1972 Clean Water Act, he learned to swim in the Hudson River.
My culture, Caribbean culture, Southern culture, and heritage is a river culture, which meant that we depended heavily upon a relationship with the Hudson River. My family, at that particular point in time, we supplemented our meals with a day's catch from the Hudson River.
The New York State Department of Health sets fish consumption advisories. EPA said in about 15 years, some people will be able to safely eat one fish from the Hudson River every 2 months. It will be more than 55 years before some people will be able to eat one fish per week. The agency says more dredging would not significantly improve that timeline. Mayer was critical of administrations of both political parties and claimed communities of color along the Hudson River are being sold out.
And we're here this evening to say no deal.
Ed Klinowski, Republican town supervisor from Stillwater and chair of the Saratoga County Board of Supervisors, said he believes the fight for a clean river is indicative of many other issues across the U.S.
And it's taken years to get us here. We need to keep on fighting. We're going to have to fight from now into our future, quite frankly, in order to right the wrongs that have occurred early and on throughout the years of our nation. And so the bottom line is, we know what to do, so let's do the right thing.
Some officials have also pushed for PCB cleanup in the Champlain Canal. The canal has not had navigational dredging in years because of the PCB contamination. Gary Klawinski, EPA's Hudson River Project Director, said comments will be accepted until September 1st. Such a comment period, already extended 90 days, is not typically held for five-year reviews. Klawinski remarked on the number of comments coming in, including at a meeting held last month in Poughkeepsie.
And And we have been seeing comments rolling in. We've been very busy, so we haven't had a chance to compile them yet and review them, but we're getting quite a few.
If the EPA determines recovery is not occurring as expected, it will consider alternative steps. The next phase of the cleanup includes studying floodplain contamination. General Electric commented on the second five-year review in June. Spokesman Mark Behan said the company, quote, will continue to support the ongoing assessment of environmental conditions in the river and work closely with EPA, New York State, local communities, and others committed to the goal of a cleaner Hudson, end quote. For more stories on the Hudson River cleanup, visit WAMC.org. Reporting from Saratoga Springs, I'm Lucas Willard.
The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and Health have released preliminary results of ongoing studies to assess PFC contamination in fish in both the Newburgh area and the Hoosic Falls region. As a result, they've issued several fish advisories. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
DEC Commissioner Basil Sagos released the results at a press conference in Newburgh, where officials have been grappling with PFOS water contamination since mid-2016.
And what we found is that the levels of PFOS in fish in several of these waterways, seven of the eight waterways we looked at, are high enough that a catch-and-release advisory should be in place for all seven waterways.
He says signs in English, Spanish, and Haitian Creole were going up Monday for Washington Lake, Silver Stream, Recreation Pond, Moodna Creek, Beaver Dam Lake, Lockwood Basin, and a stream from Stewart State Forest to Beaver Dam Lake, all places used for recreational fishing.
There is no federal standard, per se, on what is an acceptable level of PFOS in fish. So we looked to other states. There are several states that do this. Michigan, Minnesota, Alabama, Wisconsin have fish consumption advisories in effect for PFOS. So we looked at those standards and some of our internal science, and while all of this is very preliminary, we thought it appropriate to use those standards here in New York and apply this fish consumption advisory.
The agency's also issued a catch and release advisory for Thayer's Pond in the Hoosic Falls area, the only advisory for Hoosic Falls and Petersburg in Rensselaer County, where PFOA is the contaminant of concern. State Health Department Deputy Commissioner for the Office of Public Health, Brad Hutton, says elevated levels of PFOS prompted the Thayer's Pond advisory.
We tested other water bodies in the Hoosic region that did not have elevated levels of PFOA or PFOS in fish. I think what we're learning through our sampling is that PFOS accumulates in fish and PFOA does not.
And he speaks to why PFOS is showing up in fish there.
We're exploring whether there's a potential other additional source there that's different from the responsible parties that we already know of that are largely responsible for the PFOA contamination. There is a landfill nearby, Thayer's Pond, that's a potential source, but I think that investigation is continuing.
Sampling at each site included one or more sport fish species, as well as a minnow species, to evaluate impacts to the ecological food chain. Sago says DEC will upgrade the state's Hale Creek Analytical Laboratory in Gloversville to test for PFCs and more quickly process samples. Meanwhile, Hutton says the State Health Department's blood testing program for Newburgh continues.
We have extended our contracts with the four local collection sites through the end of August. To date, 5,000 people have expressed an interest and called the hotline and received a physician referral that they can then take to any of the collection sites that's most convenient for them and have their blood tested. To date, 2,200 residents have been tested of that group, and they've pretty much all received results. We're now issuing results on a rolling basis.
And the results, he says, have remained around the same and above the national average of about 5.
The levels on average are about 18, which is above the current national average, but really similar to what the national average was back in 1999 before industry stopped manufacturing, including PFS and manufacturing products.
Newburgh City Manager Michael Caravina would like to see more outreach.
We would like for the Department of Health to help us do notifications, increased notifications. We have done a tremendous marketing effort thus far, to their credit. The question now is, of what percentage of the population that drank the water has been notified and has been given the opportunity to be tested? A tremendous amount of testing has occurred, but we respectfully suggest that it's only the beginning. We need notifications, we need studies, and then we need treatment for this very serious, evolving scientific story.
Hutton says the Newburgh Area Blood Testing Program is one of the largest testing efforts nationally. Sagos and Hutton were at the press conference with Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, who announced legislative action he is taking to ensure the Department of Defense pays for the remediation of PFOS contamination at Stewart Air National Guard Base.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation is in the initial stages of updating and tightening its air quality rules. As the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains, it's part of the state's compliance with the federal air quality requirements.
Three stakeholder meetings are planned at the end of July to gather input on tightening compliance rules for the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. New York State DEC Division of Air Resources Director Stephen Flint notes there are a host of rules that are updated regularly. He says the particular rule being targeted pertains to stationary combustion installations, but he emphasized the process is in the initial phase.
We have a concept how we want to change the rule. We want to make it more stringent. The principal piece is that we want to reduce the allowable emissions levels of particulate from these types of facilities. We can see what technology is capable of doing, so we want to update our regulations. We do stakeholder meetings to talk to the regulated community, as well as other stakeholders, the environmental community who are interested in additional controls. And then from there, we'll go back and we'll develop a more detailed regulatory proposal that then goes through a formal regulatory process.
American Lung Association Assistant Vice President for National Policy Janice Nolan notes that particle pollution is inhaled and could result in numerous health problems. She points out that New York's rules would target smaller facilities, but many air pollutants come from out-of-state coal-fired power plants.
The National Ambient Air Quality Standard is an official limit on how much particle pollution is supposed to be in an area because of its harm to human health. And one of the things we've learned is that as we've cleaned up more, we've learned that even lower levels are harmful. So the cleaner levels that we're looking at now are much lower than they were 5 or 10 years ago in their requirements, but they're not where we think they need to be. And we know that there's strong evidence that having even less pollution is important.
Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan says there are several reasons it is important for New York to tighten the standards.
We still have a very large coal-fired power plant near Buffalo in New York. It's the last one, but its emissions do impact the Adirondacks. Hopefully, we're going to get to the day when we don't have any more coal-fired power plants in the state, and the state can concentrate on diesel fuel as the main source of soot.
The DEC's Flint notes that the revised rules target combustibles beyond coal-fired power plants.
This particular rule is for smaller institutions, things like schools, commercial institutions. We see a lot of wood burning now that we didn't see before as people have moved away from fuel oil, and we want to make sure that as these changes are made, we just want to keep the rules up to date. We want to keep things operating as cleanly as they can.
The DEC's stakeholder meetings are planned for July 26th, 27th, and 28th in Albany, Long Island City, and Avon, respectively.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1730, or just listen our podcast on the web at wamcpodcasts.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.